you shouldn't just be starting a business to make money. You should be starting a business because you believe in the business. And if you believe in the business, it never feels like sales. It just feels like storytelling. So one way to think about it is that you've got to go sell everybody.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back. It's Dallin, and appreciate you tuning in to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them and gets them out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. Super excited about our today's show. If tech startups are your thing, then you'll want to pay special attention to this interview. And if they're not, you're still going to want to pay special attention. I've got Josh Mortensen, the co-founder of a cyber risk management solution, on the show with us so you can learn what makes him tick and what steps he took to continually set himself up for success. Josh, thanks so much for being on our show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dallin.
So if this is your first time tuning in, appreciate you being here. The way our shows usually flow is I like to ask our guests, where are they at today? Share a little bit about themselves, where they're at today, and then we take it back. Because what you'll learn and what you'll experience as a frequent pattern through these types of interviews is that people don't often, where they're at today, they don't usually envision that years ago when they got started in their journey. And it's really an incredible experience and conversation to have to see how their minds evolve, their habits evolve, their relationships evolve. So that's why we like asking them where they're at today and then sharing their journey, how they got there. So Josh, share with our listeners a little bit about you and where you're at today.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I completely agree with everything you're saying, because who I was when I started this journey of, you know, trying to get into the business world, make some money and kind of be a creative person, it's a real journey that changes you. And I'm a completely different person than I was when I started. But for me, like who I am, a simple summary, I'm a husband, I'm a dad, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a real estate investor, but really deep down who I am is a storyteller. And currently what I'm doing today, that kind of manifests itself as writing a book and then doing podcasting. But along the journey, I've been all these different things, worn many different hats. And I think really what got me to this point, which you probably want to talk about, is the cyber risk company that I founded and kind of what that was all about. And just as like a really simple introduction to my whole journey, for me, I started off in a very poor situation financially, meaning the family that I grew up in, we had very little income, large family. My dad worked construction, just like worked his fingernails raw and just came home like broken every day. And my parents, they just didn't have much of an education to figure out like how to get beyond that point. And so for me, a lot of the motivation that I had when I was young was simply to have money. And I think for a lot of people that the idea of having money translates to things like a bigger house, fancier cars, you know, more luxurious trips. But for me, money was always really simply equated with freedom. Because when I was a kid, I saw that my parents had no freedom. They didn't want to be doing what they were doing, and they still had to do it. And so to me, it was never about a house or a car or looking the part of somebody with money or fitting in with a wealthier crowd. It was always about freedom. And to me, freedom in my life is just doing what I want to do. And so not necessarily living in a luxurious mansion, but being able to wake up every morning and do the type of work that I want to do. And so for me, for my whole journey, I think about it in two stages. The first stage was get money in the bank. And the second stage is use that money to live the life that I want to live, which is to be a creative person. And yeah, go ahead.
I want to touch on that real quick. So you mentioned your humble upbringings, right? And it's not uncommon for me to meet and connect with others that have done very well and become very successful that were in similar situations. So my question for you, Josh, is you said you came from a large family, right? If you don't mind me asking, how many siblings?
Yeah, there were seven of us, six boys, one girl, and I'm actually a twin brother. I have a twin brother, or I'm a twin. Okay. So that was kind of the dynamics. And my twin brother and I were on the older side. We had one older brother, and then everybody else was younger than us.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, how many of you have gone down this business development entrepreneur?
Exactly one. That would just be me. It wasn't something that was taught at all or even emphasized in our home. It was like something that I just latched onto, I think, from a young age. I just saw what other people, what they were able to do with their lives. And not just the comforts, but the experiences that they were able to have. And so, I don't know, for some reason, it latched onto me in a way that it didn't my siblings.
So let's touch on this for a second before we get into your journey, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs, when they get started, when they initiate a business, they feel like there's a bigger purpose. They feel like there's something that's calling their name. They may not quite know what it is or how to get there, but there's something internally that's pulling them in that direction. And in your situation with seven siblings, that this wasn't being taught in the home, which isn't like your parents don't know what they don't know, right?
Yeah, it's not a dig to say that it wasn't taught.
Correct. So I guess my question is like, what was it? Like, what do you think it was about you and your personality that really drew you to pursue something outside of the traditional 9-to-5 or going to college and getting a degree?
Yeah, well, it's a loaded question, and I'm happy to go into my journey. A lot of it may be less interesting for the viewers of this audience or your audience, just because it's less about business and more about spirituality and personal growth. But
isn't that all intertwined though?
It is. Yeah. I like to live my life in a holistic way. Like, I don't want different parts of my life to be parceled out. I want to be Josh in all these situations. And so I want to pull them together. But at the same time, yeah, if your question is about like how, like why me and why not the others, I don't really have an answer. I think that there's certainly a component of nurture and nature that goes into everybody. And for whatever reason, I was born with like a mind that wanted to constantly create. I'm not satisfied being still. You know, a lot of that may have come from the family as well, because in certain homes, certain large religious homes, there's often a lack of certain other qualities, like some emotional intelligence, some communication skills. And the lack of those things in my life eventually came back to be some of those big learning experiences that I had to go through. But at the same time, how do I put this in non-psychological terms? There's a certain level of trauma that drives people to be overachievers. And it's like a response to the world you grew up in, to either get out of that world or to figure out how to make a better world. And for whatever reason, I was always able to see the things that weren't working in my situation and the things that I saw working in other situations. And I just always wanted that for some reason.
And so that decision to see what was working and wasn't working and take that specific action, is that something that, I mean, it sounds like it kind of came to you naturally, right? Yeah. Do you feel like that intentional action was 100% in your control? And I guess a follow-up question to that is, if someone didn't feel the same way as you or feel like it came naturally, could they still make those conscious decisions to maybe reframe their mindset or view it differently?
Given my personal experience, like who I am and the way that I experience life, I have this belief that anybody can just decide to go do or be whatever they want to be. But at the same time, having read enough psychology and doing enough kind of personal journeying in comparison like with other people around me, it's pretty apparent that most people don't want to go down that path. And so what I would say about my own personal experience is actually that it's a path that can be followed, but at the same time, in a way, it could be a cautionary tale, because I'm almost 40 now and I'm just now getting to do the things that I want to do. Because like when I started a company, the end goal was to have freedom and be able to do what I wanted to do. But the immediate goal with the company is to build the company and have money. And so growing up, my mindset was that have money, have money, have money. And it wasn't until I got older that I realized that money is not wealth. Having money does not equate to a happy life. It's not wealth. Wealth is having people around you who you love and doing the things that you want to do every day. And so my whole life, I knew that I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a storyteller. But in my head, I told myself a different story, that I needed to go get money first. And so I looked at all of that money-making thing as phase one of my life so that I could get to phase two where I didn't need to think about money. And what I would say, the reason I would say it's cautionary is if I had failed at making money, then I still wouldn't be doing what I want to do. And the point, I guess, that I would share with other people is don't do anything just to make money. It's a terrible way to live and it will make you unhappy. And if you want to actually be happy, stop thinking about money and just do the thing that you want to do. So if you want to be a writer, which is what I'm doing now, like I should have just been writing for the last 20 years instead of trying to get money so that I could write.
I feel like that's we could do an entire episode just on that. that last thought there. But let's pivot a little bit, Josh, and get into the start of your journey. Sure. Right. So I feel like we've touched on a little aspects along your timeline here, which I think is very good for the show because it gives people a taste of what's coming and what to expect. So sure. Let's take it back now. Let's take it back. You're working on a book now, you're a writer, but you talked about your first phase, your first mindset was just gotta make money. Yeah. So yeah. Let's get into that and talk a little bit about this startup that you co-founded.
Yeah, for sure. So the company is called Wistic. They're based in Utah and it's a fantastic company. The focus or the product is all about providing a vendor management solution to large corporations. And this vendor management solution is all about risk and particularly security risk, information security risk. A really simple way to think about it is that there are all these large companies, yours included, Dallin, that you are using softwares to manage your company. And those softwares, you're putting your data, your information into that software. And some of that is customer information and some of that is employee information. And so there's sensitive information that you have and that you need to manage, but you have to be able to trust other companies because you have to share it with them. And so what these large companies do, think Microsoft, Amazon, Adobe, very large companies, when they manage these vendors from an information security perspective, they have to audit every one of their vendors for security. And it's a very onerous process. And so Wistic, the company, is a platform that allows companies to manage their vendor relationships, perform audits, manage profiles, things like that. A really simple way to think of the company is to say LinkedIn for information security profiles for large companies. And so, that way it's got a viral component where when we sign up a large customer, they send out a link to hundreds or even thousands of vendors who then join our platform. And so it grows it has this kind of multiplier effect. Now, going way back to the beginning of the story, it wasn't my idea. It was one of my co-founders, Andy. He had worked on a team that did this, and so it was his idea. And as far as my part in the story and what I did is I would say that had nothing to do with me personally and my skill set or my knowledge, how smart I was, but everything to do with me following a process and me trusting in the process. And so when we started this company, Andy was saying to me, hey, we need to provide this platform for these companies to manage their vendor security risk. I literally had no experience with this. I'm not a software developer. I don't know anything about information security. This wasn't about me knowing something. But Andy had the experience and he said this is a real pain. And so all I did was go out and validate that it was a real pain. And so without knowing anybody, I just went on LinkedIn and looked up every information security employee that I could find in Utah. And I just started calling them. When I would get them on the phone, I would just ask them about their process, where the pain points were, what solutions they're using right now. And as I did this, it became very apparent that all of them were struggling with a similar pain. And that when I presented them with the solution that we were mocking up, they would all get really excited and say, let me be a part of this. And so it had nothing to do with me or my ideas or my intelligence. It had everything to do with a process, which was all about identifying a pain point and then identifying the solution that customers would pay for. And that was it.
Listen, if this isn't your first time listening to our show, what he just said there, Josh, what you said, and listen, our guests don't know each other. Some of them might, right? But most of them don't. What you said right there is probably the most reoccurring theme that comes up on our show.
Yeah.
Is finding that pain point.
Yeah.
And providing a solution. That, in the most simplest terms, is entrepreneurship. Now, Josh, what's incredible is that you didn't have experience in this field.
No, not at all.
I've always been intrigued with tech and software. It fascinates me, but I like to think I have a very simple brain. So that's why I focus on real estate, because it's something I can see. It's something
I do the same. I'm the same way.
But I appreciate you sharing that, because really at the end of the day, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Your partner knew it. And it sounds like he was the one that said, hey, here's the process, here's what we need to do. And he said, okay, let's go to work. Now, you had the skill set to the drive to cold call these people. You went on LinkedIn, you cold called these people and just had a conversation with them.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, the product in like a beta phase, did you have, was it just a thought at that
point? At this point, when I first started this, we were probably like, as a team, it was me, Andy, and our CTO who we had recruited. His name's Juan. And Juan is fantastic. He's actually still the CTO of Wistic to this day. He's just fantastic. We were working on a different business entirely. We were doing something like soft in the outdoor rental space. We're trying to do software. It was a drag because we're going through the same process of trying to identify customers and ask them for their pain points. The industry was such that as we talked to more and more customers, their businesses were operated in such a variety of ways that the pain points diverged, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. We couldn't solve it because there were too many pain points. And that was becoming very frustrating for us. And at the meantime, Andy was talking about this other idea, throwing it around. And so at this point, when I started calling these companies, we were maybe 8 months into a different business. I had no experience, no information, no contacts, no products. We didn't have a website. We didn't have anything. And I just was calling. And I would just literally say, hey, I'm interested in solving this problem. Is this a problem for you? And then they would say, yes, this is a problem for us. And then it wasn't a sales call at all. It was just me asking questions. I would say, well, help me understand what the problem is. You know, what challenges do you face? Is it an efficiency thing? Is it a records management issue? And as they walked me through it, it helped me to see what the pain was. And then as I talked to them, especially early on, I was literally saying to you, these professionals, what does the solution look like to you? And then when they would tell me, I would take that back to Andy and Juan, we'd mock stuff up, and then we'd go out to new customers and then show them what we had built based on the feedback from other people. And they would just get excited. They would want to start using it as beta customers. And it was that excitement that really kept us going.
You tested the marketplace. And I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, hey, I got to design the product and then bring it to them. So in your situation, in your team's situation, how do you think not having the product actually helped you have a successful launch?
Well, it's the only way we could have done it because let me tell you this story. At the same time that we were starting this company in Utah, three guys with no money. I mean, we had won some like on-campus student competitions, because when we started the company, I was actually in the MBA program up there. And that was part of the whole thing too, was I was like starting this company using student debt. And the situation we were in was that we had no money, no product, no experience, no connections in the industry, nothing. And as a startup, it may sound like we're way behind, because there was this other company that we were going up against, and they were coming at it from a completely different perspective, where they were all seasoned veterans in the industry, and they had close friendships with a bunch of private equity investors who had billions of dollars at their control. And so this company we were going up against, they were designing their product using funding, millions of dollars of funding, building their product with like one customer who was also part of the investment team. And so that sounds like it would be the ideal situation, you know, expertise, experience, connections, money, know-how. But the problem was that it was like a David and Goliath situation, where we were so small, so nimble, and like we had to be nimble. We had to be laser focused on what the most important thing was. And we had to rely on our customers to know what to build. And because of that, there was like no chance that we were going to fail, because the other guys were just building stuff and then trying to take it to market. And we were going to the market and having them tell us what to build.
And that's the key right there. And I'd imagine from a sales approach, not having the actual product, as soon as you cold call someone and you're like, hey, I actually don't have something, I'm just trying to identify this is a pain point, I'd imagine that their defenses to salespeople drops, because it's like, oh, okay, Josh isn't here to sell me something. He's really interested in me and my company. and helping me solve this problem.
Yeah, all of our initial customers felt more like allies than customers, because they would call us and they would say like, hey, I had this idea, or they would email us and say like, hey, when's the next time you guys are coming out? So
a team, and you had three people on your team at this point, right?
Yeah, at the
time. So three people, but now you've engaged however many other people that saw your vision, that saw what you guys were doing. So even though there was only three on your team, you really had a pretty big following that was actively and willing to contribute ideas to the creation of this.
Yeah, and that was absolutely critical for us. In fact, anytime that we started to get kind of bogged down, if we had some doubts, if we weren't sure what the priority was, where to go next, I would just get back on my computer and I would just call or email, and I would just schedule a bunch, like I would reschedule, like, we haven't seen these guys for 3 months, let's go visit them again. As soon as I'd reach out, they would say, yes, come visit. Because we would show up and we wouldn't be like, okay, you're ready to sign this contract, you're ready to give us money. We would show up and we would say, hey, here's the progress we've made. This is what it looks like today. This is what we're thinking about next. And then they would just get really excited about what we've got, the ideas that are coming out, because we involved them from the very beginning. And I mean, for us, it just ensured that we weren't building things that didn't need to be built. We had no like throwaway product because everything was very hyper-focused.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about two different types of relationships in business. You got transactional, and then you have transformational.
Yeah.
Transactional is, hey, let's get the deal done. You pay me my fee, we get the work, we move on, right? Then there's transformational. And then the transformational relationship, that's where we grow together. You and the client, you and the customer, you grow together, because as things adapt, as things pivot, you're able to provide suggestions and ideas together. And it sounds like that's exactly what you and your company did. You targeted, maybe unintentionally, that transformational relationship, because that's what was required for you at that time to put out that product. Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. There was no other way for us to do it. In fact, just to piggyback off what you're saying, as far as relationships, it really is, that's all business is. It's a set of relationships. And if you're the founder, if you're on the founding team, then your job is just to manage sets of relationships. And so that includes the co-founders and employees, but that also includes the customer. And then that also includes investors and advisors that you have to go out and recruit. In a way, it's all people skills, but it's also all sales. It's all sales. And so if it's not something you really believe in, if it's not something you really want to sell, then it will wear you out constantly doing sales to everybody, including your own employees.
And sales, when people hear sales or say sales, some people get that bad taste in their mouth, or they're like, I don't want to do sales. In reality, we're selling every single day and we don't realize it. And I think that's what more people need to realize. Every day, Josh, I am selling myself to my wife to let her know, like, hey, I am a good husband. I am a good father. This is why you might want to keep me around, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, all joking aside, though, that's really what it is. And it's not faking until you make it. It's not being disingenuous, right? You got to be authentic. You got to be yourself. But at the end of the day, when you have something, when you have a solution for a pain point, why wouldn't you want to share that with others? If you know that their life will be improved because of it, why wouldn't you want to share it? And if you take that transformational approach and really connect with your customers and have those relationships, you're able to have good conversations that aren't salesy. You don't come across as a used car salesman. You're involving them in the process. So now it's viewed more as a partnership than it is a transactional deal, right? And and I think that's so important for people listening, whether you're new or experienced. Maybe it's just a good reminder for you. Be like, yeah, it is the relationships. It's about providing that value and just being a good person, having a good conversation and helping them understand and visualize why they need your product or you, right? I mean, it really depends on what you're providing.
Yeah, it's really easy to think of sales as a dirty word or like an activity that you maybe feel some discomfort with, you don't want to participate in. But what you're saying is right. It's absolutely right. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying before. You shouldn't just be starting a business to make money. You should be starting a business because you believe in the business. And if you believe in the business, it never feels like sales. It just feels like storytelling. So one way to think about it is that you've got to go sell everybody. Another way to think about it is you are telling a story and you're looking for people who will participate in that story with you. And so it's easy. You just ask them what they want. What do they need? Like, what are they interested in? And if it matches what you're trying to provide, they're going to join your story. And so
such a powerful mind shift hack that you just shared right there.
Yeah.
Right. You're reframing how you're looking at it. You're not selling, you're telling a story. How many people can I tell my story to? You know, and going down this path, like if you say you had 20 sales calls you want to make that day, it's not 20 clients you're trying to sell, it's 20 people that you want to share your story with.
Yeah.
And just doing that little, just reframing, just making that little shift can make all the difference in your energy and your motivation and your voice and your tone and your ability to connect with these people. Because now you're not focused on the product you're trying to sell them. You're focused on them and their pain points. And in your story, naturally, you're going to share, hey, I just had a conversation with someone in a similar situation as you yesterday, and this was their response. And so you start sharing those things. They're able to relate. You're able to show how you were able to provide help. And now you've initiated this transformational relationship.
Yeah. And with that transformation, you build a lot of trust. If you're asking questions to truly understand, you're going to build a lot more trust than if you're trying to tell them things. You got to go into it realizing that they're the expert. Like, they're literally the expert. They have the degree, they have the experience, they have the role. They're the ones using the tools right now and managing the problem right now. They're the experts. So you have to go and get their understanding of it. They don't care about your understanding of it.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. I often refer to this a lot. You're the guide to the hero story. Right. Your customer is the hero. You're simply the guide. You need to set yourself up as a Mr. Miyagi to the Daniel Russo, right?
Yeah.
Daniel Russo was the star in the Karate Kid, right? He was the one, he was the hero. Mr. Miyagi was the guide that helped him along the way.
Yeah.
And when you take that approach and you set them up for success, that's where that relationship comes into play. You let them shine and you share how this product is going to make you be an even better business owner, even better manager, whatever it is that you're working on. So good stuff, Josh. Well, so share with us, from my understanding, you've sold your equity in that company, right? So let's talk about that a little bit, the time it took from you making all these cold calls to growing it, and then that transition out. And then we can get into a little bit about what you're working on right now.
Yeah. Well, just to be really kind of honest up front, the transition out was not a simple, like, it wasn't what I had hoped for. It wasn't what I had planned.
When is it ever?
Yeah. I mean, when you start a company, you think you're just going to work there until it's done. You know, you're going to ride it out and get to experience it all and know everybody and, you know, participate in all the challenges and the growth. But I actually only ended up being there for about 3 years. From like the time I started working on it until the time I left, it was about 3 years. And I was the CEO throughout that period. But earlier I mentioned two things about my upbringing. One of them was that there was a real lack of emotional intelligence in my home. And there was also a real lack of communication in my home. And so I carried these two problems forward into my career. And about 3 years into the business, it was pretty apparent that I wasn't good at understanding my own emotions or reading the emotions of other people. And I wasn't good at communicating my needs or trying to understand their needs. And so from a company perspective, see, I was really, really good at storytelling. I was really good at finding good people and bringing them in and getting them excited. But as far as keeping them organized in an ongoing process, that part wasn't for me. And so that's another thing to recognize about a business, is that there are very different stages. The first stage is always very exciting because it's all imaginary. You're just inventing it in your head and you're talking about it and it hasn't even happened yet. And that part of a business is very exciting, and you just go out and you try to get other people excited about it as well. But at some point you reach a threshold where you have a product and you have customers, and you now have a business that's a going concern, and it needs to operate in an efficient, consistent manner. And me, the type of person that I am, like wanting to be creative, wanting to be free, and again, lacking emotional intelligence and communication, I personally was unable to make the jump to that next stage. And so my founding team had to sit me down and say, hey, Josh, like, you were great before, but this isn't working anymore. And so it was a really painful process of having to step away. Fortunately, we had some great investors at the time, and we had customers, we had a product, like we were going along. And so when I stepped away, I was able to sell a few shares to some existing investors just to keep me afloat for the next year. I went off and I worked for Amazon, and I was in their devices operation and finance group for a couple years. And in the meantime, the guys that I had brought into Wistic, they were still there, just like managing the company and doing a fantastic job. And they've gone through several investor raises since, including last year was their Series B, and it was big round. And so at that point, I was able to sell a big chunk, not all of it, but a big chunk of my existing shares to investors. And so that's where my financial situation comes from. The company is still operating. I still own some shares, but it's not anywhere near the point where it's like going to exit and we have the, you know, the big final outcome.
I want to start off by saying that I appreciate the vulnerability there. What you just shared, you could have easily set yourself up as like, oh yeah, I had other ventures, so I decided to sell. Mm-hmm. So I want to recognize and acknowledge your vulnerability there and sharing with me and with our listeners that, hey, not everything goes as planned. And one thing that I really picked up on that I appreciate about you, Josh, is the ownership, the extreme ownership that you took and recognized that, hey, this is how I could have done things differently, or this is why things happened the way they did. And I think that is such a strong, undervalued characteristic and strength of entrepreneurs. It's not only recognizing the wins and patting yourself on the back when you do good, but also recognizing when maybe things could have done differently, or I could have approached this differently. So I really appreciate that. I do. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, no, like it took me a long time to get there. You know, I had to figure it out, and then I had to be honest with myself, and then I had to figure more out, and I had to be honest with myself. It's just where I am now because, you know, I want to be a writer. I can't be dishonest as a writer. I have to be honest. And so I have to be honest in my life. It's just where I'm at. And I also wouldn't feel comfortable getting on here and talking myself up when in reality, there are some amazing people who did the heavy lifting for me. And that's the case in every business. You know, like, I don't know if you know comedy, but there's this comedian, Bill Burr, and he's got this great bit about Steve Jobs, where Steve Jobs likes to go out on stage and say, I did this and I did that and I did that. But in reality, he just has ideas and he points at people and he says, do it, get it done. You know, I'm not a Steve Jobs. I was like, and I think that my story is like, you hear these stories all the time. These people say, like, I failed to my success. That's exactly what I did. Like, I just had failure after failure after failure that somehow made me successful.
One of the biggest problems I have with this, with one of these statements, is the statement that I'm a self-made millionaire. I can't stand it. I get to a point where people are coming from, but no millionaire is made on their own. Mm-hmm. There is always, always other people involved in situations. So whenever, personally, now, whenever I hear that, if that comes out of somebody's mouth, I'm a self-made millionaire, I take note of it. And for me, it's a red flag. Like, you need to be able to recognize how others have gotten you to where you are. It could even be your parents, right? Like, you grew up in a home where you didn't have what you wanted, and that was absolutely part of your journey. So, like, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a self-made millionaire. It takes people, relationships, friends, coworkers, wins, failures. It requires all of that to become successful.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I agree. And I think when you called me to initially talk about this as an opportunity, I told you, I shared with you some of my thinking about games and how the world is really just a bunch of games. And what you're saying makes total sense. Like, you can't be a millionaire by yourself because you can't play the game by yourself. Because if you're not playing with other people, then there's no money for you to be a millionaire. And to take a step back to kind of help the listeners understand what I'm talking about, I see all of the world, all of human behavior, all of these activities, I see them as games that people choose to play. So when we were younger and we were kids, we would go hang out with our siblings or with other kids, and you just mingle. And as kids mingle, they throw out ideas for games. Let's play hide and seek. Let's play tag. Let's play basketball. Let's, you know, do this. Let's do that. And a lot of times kids are inventing games. Kids love to invent games. And in that way, a lot of kids find the games that they want to play. And when we're kids, we're happy to jump into games and participate. And if we don't do well, if it's not for us, we just walk away. We just say like, oh, that's not the game that I want to play. We don't always get down on ourselves because we're not good at the game. We just realize that we don't enjoy the game. Now, if you look at the world of adults, you know, we're not children, air quotes, children anymore. But in reality, everything that we're doing is just a game that somebody invented. Because if you go back far enough, there is no industry. There is no economy. There aren't jobs. There aren't schools. If you go back far enough, everybody's just living as hunter-gatherers in the woods. And then at some point, things shift. And we start to have enough food that there's more people. And we don't have to move around as much. And then all of a sudden, there are people sitting around without things to do. And so they start inventing new things to do. And so they start inventing things like religions and governments, militaries, economies, educational systems, agricultural systems, monetary systems. And it's all an invention that at some point somebody said, hey, should we do this? And it started as a story, like, we should do this. And then they were able to get enough people to participate in the story to play the game with them. So today, when you look around, every job out there is actually a game. It's a game. And if you're not good at the game or you don't enjoy the game, then you shouldn't be playing the game. And so when people like Steve Jobs give their speeches at universities and say, you should follow your passion, follow your passion, follow your passion. Passion's a really hard word to understand, but what he really means is find a game that you are good at and that you want to play. If you go out into the world and you look around and you're like, there aren't any games that I want to play, then we live in a Western democracy with it's a free economy. Go start a new game and see if other people will play with you.
I could see why you claim that you're good at storytelling, Josh. I appreciate you sharing that. And what a great way to look at it. Like, really, it is just a game. So a follow-up question to that is, why do so many people choose to keep playing the game when they shouldn't be? They might be unhappy. They might be miserable. Yeah. Like, why, in your thoughts, in your opinion, why do people choose to play when in reality they should be stepping away and doing something different?
It's because people think that they grow up. We don't. We're not grown up. We're the same as we were when we were kids. It's just that we think we grew up. And so we start believing this story that everything is serious. It's not. Everything could go away and we would still be alive. We would still have to survive on this planet if everything collapsed. We would just have to invent new games to survive. And I think that the reason that people like me end up being okay stepping outside of other people's games, for me personally, is because I grew up in a way that I didn't play other people's games. You know, I grew up in a big religious family. And as part of that, my parents decided to homeschool us in the countryside. And so I spent my childhood just walking around the countryside by myself, playing my own games. And so when it comes to me integrating into a society or an economy, there's no game that feels good to me. And so I had to create my own. I haven't always put it in that language, but I've seen it that way from the very beginning. And there are a lot of people out there who feel the same way. You know, they want to work hard. They want to be productive. They want to be industrious, but they look around and there's no games that motivate them. And so they feel like lazy. They feel like they're useless. They feel like they don't have what it takes inside of them. Because it really is hard. The world is a giant story and there's stories stacked on top of stories. And our job, in most cases, what's expected of us is just to accept the stories and participate. And
at least that's what we're conditioned.
That's right. And most people have no idea that it's a story. Like, most people have no idea that everybody who's successful is just a regular person.
And this is where we start getting into the mindsets and being the difference between being unconsciously aware. and that's, I love getting into that type of mindset and psychology of things, because it's almost like you start waking up is the way that I like to look at it. You start waking up and you start seeing the world from your own lens rather than being conditioned to look at it or do things because of parents, friends, teachers. Like, for the first 18 years of our life, most of us are told what we need to be doing. And then they throw us out into college, throw us out into the real world and expect us to be able to figure it out, which that's not the way that the system had designed it. They designed it in a way to be, hey, you grow up, you get a degree, you get a good job, and you work for someone. Yeah. And then you retire.
Yeah.
So it's, it, it, Man, but I think we could keep going on that for a while.
I think a lot of, like, probably the reason why a podcast like this would even have a viewership is because most people hit that point where they go through the process, they go through the system, right? Elementary school, middle school, high school, college, maybe a secondary degree. But what that does is at that point, you should be able to just be plugged into the system. And because you're so well trained and prepared, being plugged into the system should make you happy because you fit in. But I think what most people experience in their bodies, maybe not consciously, maybe it's that unconscious awareness, is they hit that point in their life around like 30 and they go, oh, like I bought into all of this and now I feel like I don't really care.
I think there's going to be a lot of people that resonate with that.
Yeah.
What you just said. And that's part of becoming more consciously aware of our situations, yeah, of our lives, and really seeing it as a big story and knowing that we have the ability to control that story. We have the ability to rewrite our own stories. So we're coming up on time here, Josh, but I think this is a perfect segue right into what you're currently doing because you are writing a story. Yeah. So yeah, Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to be a storyteller now. And so I'm doing that in two ways. The first one is that I write. And again, I just have a process. I don't think of myself as like somebody special or intelligent or anything. I just have a process. I sit down every morning at 8 o'clock at my desk, the desk I'm sitting at right now. And from 8 to at least about 10 o'clock, minimum of 2 hours, I write and I have no end period. And so I say I write for a minimum. And if I feel like it, I keep going. And if I'm exhausted or tired, then I can stop. So usually I write for about 2 to 3 hours a day. And then that's the process. Like you sit down and write for 2 to 3 hours, Monday through Friday, every day, and you can't help but create a book. And then
do you have a specific direction for this book? Do you have a specific thing? Or right now, is it just getting your thoughts out on paper and then reorganizing it into a book?
So the type of writing that I've always wanted to do is I'm really interested in nonfiction, but I want to be the kind of storyteller that puts something out into the world that's of use to somebody. Maybe it can become like a new mythology for them because it helps them understand who they are and the world that they live in. And
just out of curiosity, what about these books? One of my favorite books is called The Alchemist. I don't know if you've read that one.
I've heard the name, but I don't know. I haven't read it myself.
So it's a fictional story of this boy that has a dream of a treasure in Egypt. He lives in southern Spain, and he has this dream of this treasure in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And the whole book is him on this journey pursuing that treasure. And really, at the end of it, the treasure was the lessons and the values and the people he met along the way. Yeah. So given your experience, I mean, you say you're not qualified to write a nonfiction book, but you were part of a very successful tech startup. So I would challenge your thought on that.
Well, it's all about the game I want to play. So I don't really want to write I don't want to write a business book, you know, it's not super exciting for me. And so if I wanted to write a nonfiction, like I want to write history, philosophy, you know, and so I just got to get there.
Awesome. Good stuff.
But the book I'm writing right now, it's fiction. Honestly, I don't talk about it very much. I have this philosophy around storytelling, where if I tell the story, then I lose the energy to tell the story correctly. And so I don't tell anybody about what I'm writing.
Ooh.
But it's fiction and it's a story and one day it'll be available. But the thing I am willing to share though is I'm also doing a podcast because I found that writing, I spent the first 15, 20 years of my life just like working all day, every day. And then once I became a writer, it's like you write in the morning, but then your body needs to recover from the writing. And then I have some time. And so I found that talking to people like this, like if I write, it wears me out emotionally and mentally, but then I sit down and I talk with somebody like you and it gives me all this energy. It lifts me back up. And so it also doesn't require me to like be writing, right? It's like a different type of energy and creativity. And so I also do a podcast. It's called the Explorer Poet Podcast. And I just find interesting people in like creative spaces, artists, writers, people who work at like curators from museums or people who founded nonprofits and special spaces. And I just sit down and kind of do a similar thing. It's not about money or success, but it's about just their journey, what they're doing, the creative process, what creativity and art really means. And so that's how I spend my day, is I write and then I talk to people about their creative ventures.
It's ironic you bring that up because I'm a real estate investor. That's what I do. And I provide opportunities to others to invest alongside with us. But I intentionally, very intentionally, did not want to do a real estate podcast.
Yeah.
Because what energizes me is the mindset. It's getting into what makes these people tick. And even though your guests are a different type of guest, it's really getting into their mindsets.
Yeah.
What makes them tick? What makes them, why did they pursue what they did? What perspectives can they share that I can learn from?
Yeah.
And so part of this podcast was kind of selfish for me because I wanted to connect with people like you, Josh, and others that are in different areas of business that, and not, yeah, we talk about their business naturally, but the business is the vehicle, right?
Yeah.
That they use. What I really want to get into is like, how they got into that vehicle in the first place and what did they learn to along the way. So
yeah, absolutely. I do the same thing because we talk about their art, we talk about their creativity, but really it's like, when was the first time you told a story? When was the first time you used art to express yourself? You know, for you, Dallin, when was the first time you started organizing and leading people? You know, when was the first time you did all this? It was probably pretty young.
So it's out, the Explorer Poet podcast. It's actively going.
Yeah, I've been doing it for about 7 months now. I've got about 6 months worth of episodes released and I've got a couple more backlogged, but really right now I'm just working on building the list of guests for the coming year and then I'll move forward with that.
Good stuff. Well, Josh, man, this is awesome. We're unfortunately up on time, but given the few conversations you and I have had, I feel like we could just keep going and going.
Yeah, it's fun. It's so fun to talk, man.
It's a lot of fun. Definitely appreciate it. So in closing, as we wrap this up, there's four questions we like to ask all of our guests here. So I'm going to shoot them your way and then have you share to our listeners your thoughts there. So what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
Yeah. When I was younger, I really grew up, like when I was trying to figure out all this money stuff, I grew up reading books like The Millionaire Next Door and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Books like that. But then once I started to get into more like business stuff, I found people like Peter Thiel. His book Zero to One is fantastic because there are all these ideas about what, like there are all these cliches of information in the business world. And Peter Thiel in that book kind of just goes one by one and shows how they're all false. And so it's really helpful because it changes your paradigm. You realize that there is no way to do something. You just have to go figure out what's right for what you're doing.
What was the name of that book?
The book is Zero to One by Peter Thiel. And then the other one, it's not a book, but there's this guy online named Naval Ravikant. He's the founder of AngelList. And he's got this Twitter account. And then he's also got this podcast that basically, I started off by saying making money is a process. And that's his whole thing is basically like, it's a process. Like if he has this whole thing where if he was immediately $0 today, completely poor, no connections, just entered the country, he says that within 10 years, he'd be a millionaire. And I believe it because it's just a process. So Naval Ravikant, or just Naval, he goes by Naval. You can find him on podcasts, but he's also got his own. And it's like these episodes that are like 4 minutes. They're just these quick 4 minutes and it's probably like 20 of them. And that's the whole thing. And awesome. he just breaks down the whole process. Yeah.
Excellent. Awesome. So what has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
Same thing. When I was younger, I definitely associated with this Robert Frost poem, The Two Roads. And the last few lines in the poem is two roads diverged in a wood and I took the one less traveled by. And that has made all the difference. And my wife and I put that up on our wall when we were first married. And it just became like, we were always willing to just do things differently than other people. And it's made a huge difference for us. But now today, having gone through this whole journey, there's this other quote that really runs my life. It like governs my thinking about everything that I do. And it's really simple. I just tell myself, everything evolves always. Which is to say, like, everything's going to change and you better keep up with it.
Wow. I love that. And being able to adapt.
Yeah.
And learn along the way. Excellent. Josh, if there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
Going back to my own personal journey, phase one and phase two, I would say skip phase one. Like, just don't even think about money. Don't pursue money. Pursue a daily life that you would love to live. And you don't need money to do that. Just go start writing, go start your podcast, go start your YouTube channel, go figure out whatever it is you want to do. And don't go seek money to do that. Just start doing that.
Love it. Josh, how can our listeners learn more about you? and what you're currently doing, and more specifically, how can they get on your list to hear about this book when it releases?
Oh, good question. So I currently, right now, I have a Twitter. It's at Morty_Josh. And then I also have a Twitter for the podcast and an Instagram for the podcast. It's the Explore Poet podcast, which is the website too, www.explorepoet.com.
Awesome. Listen, if you've enjoyed this conversation, go follow Josh. Awesome dude. If you haven't gotten a taste of that from the short interview with him and the way his mind works, I'm telling you, there's a lot that you can take and learn from what he's gone through. So this has been a great conversation. And listen, if this is your first time listening, I'm so glad you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. So my company partners with other business professionals that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work for other multi-million-dollar businesses like yours by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. Now, if you're listening to the podcast, Josh was in the tech startup, but he's a real estate investor and a writer now. So it's not uncommon for people in different industries to get involved in real estate, but sometimes it can be very overwhelming and they may not know how to get started or where to get started. And that's where my team comes in. We really help educate and share with you and talk about if this is a good opportunity to partner alongside us in large apartment deals. That's what our team focuses on. So if that's you and you've been wondering how to get involved in real estate, go to our website, investwithrev.com, schedule a 15-minute discovery call, and let's just jump on a call and see if it's a good fit. And we can't, since we're regulated by the SEC, we can't put you onto a deal. So it really is just making sure that alignment's there. So Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope that you and I can connect more and maybe even work together again in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Dallin. This was a lot of fun.
Excellent. And to our listeners, remember, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there, earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments, so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.